TED Audio Collective.
You're listening to TED Talks Daily, where we bring you new ideas to spark your curiosity every day. I'm your host, Elise Hume. We have just started something special, a new original series called TED Intersections. It features speakers and experts taking on subjects at the intersection of their expertise. On this episode, conservationist Christine McDivitt-Tompkins and theater director Amir Nizar Zouabi. The two of them come from divergent disciplines, but overlap when it comes to the ways they think about the changing planet and living creatures, the possibility of systems-level change, and how to start a movement. After the break.
Hi, I'm Bilawal Sidhu, host of TED's newest podcast, The TED AI Show, where I talk with the world's leading experts, artists, journalists, to help you live and thrive in a world where AI is changing everything. I'm stoked to be working with IBM, our official sponsor for this episode. In a recent report published by the IBM Institute of Business Value, among those surveyed, one in three companies pause an AI use case after the pilot phase. And we've all been there, right? You get hyped about the possibilities of AI, spin up a bunch of these pilot projects, and then crickets. Those pilots are trapped in silos, your resources are exhausted, and scaling feels daunting. What if, instead of hundreds of pilots, you had a holistic strategy that's built to scale? That's what IBM can help with. They have 65,000 consultants with generative AI expertise who can help you design, integrate, and optimize AI solutions. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. Because using AI is cool, but scaling AI across your business, that's the next level.
Support for this show comes from Brooks Running. My friends at Brooks sent me the amazing new Ghost 16s. I don't know about y'all, but having new shoes, especially really lightweight ones that I like, get me out there. It's like enough motivation just to have that soft cushioning. You can take your daily joyride in these better than ever Ghost 16s, now with nitrogen infused DNA Loft V3 cushioning. So lightweight, so soft, it'll help you turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Visit brooksrunning.com to learn more. Support for the show comes from Mint Mobile. You know when you discover a new show that's worth binging, or a song that you play on repeat and you have to share it with your friends so they can experience how awesome it is just as you have? That's kind of what it feels like when you discover that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's such an awesome deal. There's no way that you can keep it to yourself, and that's why I'm telling you all about it. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan and switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/talks. That's mintmobile.com/talks. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/talks. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Like TED Talks? You should check out the TED Radio Hour with NPR. Stay tuned after this talk to hear a sneak peek of this week's episode.
And now, our TED Talk of the day.
Amal, which is my first project, was a refugee child that traveled. She was a puppet, but she was a refugee child. One of the most beautiful moments from my point of view was recently on the border of Mexico and the United States. There was a big line of immigrants, asylum seekers, yeah. Refugees. Right. I don't want to get into the political titles, but people that are leaving a country mm-hmm. in order to find a better life. They were standing in the sun in the Sonora Desert, and Amal arrived out of nowhere because we were Almighty. Walking there. And there was a beautiful moment where the border police, the American border mm-hmm. police, and the children of the immigrants and the immigrants themselves all had the same look on their face. Yeah. And the look was full of love.
Yeah.
And I think that moment, suddenly they all became one thing for a brief second. It only lasts a second, but.
I wouldn't have actually understood that, except I've seen Amal. And this really had a tremendous impact on me, because you're taking all the feelings and expressions that we have standing on the ground, and we all know what they are, but then you elevate this, even though she's a puppet, she transcends everything that we, really the only languages we have on the ground, and transcends that and walks straight over the top of how we behave day to day.
That moment was a huge moment of really optimism for me.
Yeah. Well, I can see that. Will you talk a little bit about the herd? Do you mind?
The herds.
Herds.
We're creating a big migration of life-sized puppet animals made from recycled materials, mainly cardboard. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start in Central Africa in the Congo Basin, which is in many ways the cradle of civilization. And we're going to journey from Congo, from Kinshasa, all the way to Tromsø in the north of Norway, in a long, long, slow journey of migration. The animals are leaving because the world is becoming too hot, so they're going to... The animals leave because they are early warning signs of a systematic collapse. And the animals leave and walk through our cities to remind us of beauty. I think beauty is a big word, an important word. They remind us of what happens when we work together, because this project is obviously about a huge network of collaborations between people, and that we can achieve impossible things, even ridiculously impossible things. But you know a lot about ridiculously impossible, right? So that's the idea behind the herds. And we're starting in the spring of 25, so it's quite close. Yeah. And come and walk with me.
I'm going
with lots of puppet animals.
No, I'm going to. I'm going to take one of the gazelles. And I want to do the stint where they get far enough into the Sahara that they can't go any farther, and then they appear on the northern side.
I can't wait.
And my thumb is out. I'm going to hitchhike on.
Hitchhiking on a paper camera.
That's right. Wow.
Amal was very, very powerful, not just because she was beautiful and very big. I think the pure genius of the people who created Amal, mm-hmm. Handspring Puppet Company, was to create a perfect storm of vulnerability and fierceness. Mm. She's completely vulnerable as a structure. She's a stilt walker hanging above and can collapse at any second, and that's visible.
Yeah.
People see that she's not stable, but she's also huge and fierce.
Yeah.
Which leads me to my next question to you, in a way, because you are in many ways of a mixture of vulnerability and fierceness, right? Mm. I think you took your personal pain and flipped it into this huge power to change things. Mm. And I think that opens up so many interesting points for me in questions I want to ask you of how do you do that? How do you take loss and pain and grief and turn it into this all-consuming positive power to change the world? Because you are changing the world.
You know, I grew up in a family where our father was super clear, all of his kids. He didn't care what we did, but make sure you're great at it. So I had that kind of firepower drilled into me when I was little. And then Patagonia, Yvon Chouinard, who wanted to start making clothes, he just said, oh, here, invent this company. So I like starting things at zero. I like things that are difficult. I like, I don't know if that's a personality trait or something, but the work that Tompkins Conservation does today is essentially supporting our legacy groups, rewilding Chile in that country and rewilding Argentina and expanding the work we've done for the last 30 years out into the rest of the continent in terms of rewilding and land and sea conservation. Doug and I worked in all these projects for 25 years, and then when he died suddenly, it's no secret, I just wanted to go with him. Not kill myself, but just walk into the same lake and vanish. And yet, we have all of these people, these team members, they're like family. You have been through wars with them. You're living in these very isolated places, and you're building schools so the kids of the team members can go to school locally. And, you know, you're creating these villages. And the power of a village, as I'm sure you know, is, I think, perhaps one of the great strengths of human bonding. And so I finally thought, what am I doing? I have to turn this into something else. And then it was just like that. Just get up and... you just don't stop. I don't know. I think there are elements of our character and personality that only when they're at their, the your skin is so burned that you are in communication with a part of yourself that is almost never called upon, but you have it. And in many ways, you're on autopilot at first. You just start doing, and pretty soon the doing becomes a form in itself. And the loss, it doesn't retract itself, but somehow it starts to add in to the doing. And so that, you know, grief is like learning to speak a second, third, fourth language, and eventually acting on things that you believe in and you're relentless about, that begins to take the same power that this grief had at one point. Something like that.
And now back to the episode.
How do you deal with no? Because I'm sure in creating these huge parks, there were many no's. There's many walls to bash your head against, and they don't always crack.
You know, we haven't had so many no's. We've worked with 12 different presidents, and I think we've created a national park with every one of them. But we have had, you know, very difficult times when people thought we were creating new Jewish states, even though we were raised as Anglicans, or a new military base for Argentina, or a nuclear waste dump for the United States. So we had years when it was quite dangerous and a lot of death threats. Phones were tapped for years and years and things like that. But I think you just keep your shoulder to the ground and keep doing exactly what you said you're doing. And eventually, people begin to understand that maybe what they've been talking about is what they're actually doing. And you have to earn people's trust. You have to, I think that's a huge part of the job, is showing up and doing exactly what you say you're going to do. And you do it year after year after year after year. And pretty soon you're starting to change culture. You're starting to change how society looks at their own jewels of their country. And goes something like that.
Are you an optimist? No, after, you know,
I'm not an optimist for this century, because I think what's already begun is, in terms of climate impacts, the great extinction crisis. I get asked this a lot, and it's usually couched in a, do you think climate, the fear of climate chaos is real? And I'm so in shock by that question, because if people really understand that hundreds of millions of people today are affected by the change in their climate, whether it's drought, it's monsoon, it's all these swinging extremes going back and forth. And if you're on an island in the southern Pacific, or if you're in the Sudan, the South Sudan, northern Kenya, these things are happening. And it's very hard to slow this train down. So in the short term, I'm very concerned. As David Attenborough says, the vast majority of people who are influenced and affected by climate change are the very people who have no say in it, and they're the very people who can't get out of the way. I already have this sense of tremendous pain that these things are underway. And I think this is going to be a very difficult next 50 years, 80 years. And I think somehow I'm more optimistic about the next century, because we will have gone through this calamity as a world people. And I hope that humans finally figure out that they have no choice. They have to live within the confines and boundaries of natural systems. That's how I see it.
I'm actually very hopeful. I know this coming from, yeah. I'm an optimist. I'm an optimistic pessimist. Obviously, coming from where I come, there's no reason to be optimistic. But I do believe in mankind. I think we will come to our senses. We usually do it too late, a bit too late, yeah. But somehow we do it on the brink. And we pay a price. And I think we are paying a price. Yeah. It's not theoretical. Walking That's with true. A mile through Europe, you see mm-hmm. people that have left because of climate change. This is not theoretical. And it will also, and I think that's part of the reason why I don't know if optimistic is the right word, but we don't know what the effects are.
That's right.
There is a bit of we're protected. It will happen to the global south, which is not necessarily true. It's happening now in the global south because these are weaker communities. The infrastructure is weaker. There's not enough fat on the body.
Yeah, that's right.
But water, you know, who knows? Who knows what will, yeah, how it will hit?
I agree with you. You know, I study economics and petroleum futures and all kind of strange things, trying to understand, like, at what point are we going to really understand the real impacts of things. And you know what black swans are? They are these unanticipated consequences that have no, there's no warning. Like, for instance, if you look at the fall of the Berlin Wall, and if you take yourself to early, mid-September to 1989, nobody thought the Berlin Wall would come down. And early October, it's finished. And so these black swans exist. They're unanticipated consequences. So I agree with you. We can't know today how this is all going to unfold. And therefore, I think you and I work on things regardless of how we see the immediate mid-range and long-term outcomes. it's not going to change what you do when you get up at night, because you don't actually know how it's going to unfold.
And I think, and that's true to war and nature.
Yeah.
The minute it's over, life starts in all its vivacity and all its beauty. Yeah. You know, you see a fire and a second later, the forest starts again, kicks in again. In the midst of the terrible devastation that's happening in my homeland, there's children playing. And even in the rubble, I saw a beautiful video of children sliding down a slab of concrete of a demolished house. And the laughter and the joy was incredible. Inside all this misery, and I think life is very powerful, and that's what keeps me optimistic in these very, very frightening times. And I'm not talking only about my homeland. I'm talking about our faith as mankind, as humankind.
What keeps you awake at night? What are you thinking about?
A lot of things keep me awake at night. I come from Palestine, so here was especially tormenting. I've lost friends. The situation back home is very, very dire, and very, that keeps me awake at night. But I think that our lack of compassion is what drives me. And in many ways drove me to become a theater practitioner when I was a young kid in Palestine. And I chose the tool I know best, which is storytelling, to create compassion. And I think there's a lot of connection between the lack of compassion to our fellow man, but also to our climate, to our environment, to our spaces, to the other creatures that live with us on this ever-rotating planet. And I think they're very connected. All these issues are connected for me. I can't separate the violence that is ensued now in my home from the violence that is ensued on climate. And of course, they're also connected, because the engine is very similar.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the devastation of human communities through war or all sorts of injustice and inequity is exactly the same phenomenon that's happening with the non-human world as well. There's so few people who really pull the levers and run kind of the globalized economy and so on and so forth. But if we believe that all life has intrinsic value, which I think we do believe that, then it's very painful, as you say, in human societies, and it's extremely painful in the non-human world as these species blink out. And some of them millions and millions of years on this planet. And in the blink of an eye, in geologic time, they're gone. And of course, if you pull way back, species are rising and falling. But I have a lot of trouble staying so understanding when we know what's taking place in the human and non-human world, and the number of decisions within boardrooms around the world don't reflect the price that life is having to pay for this lifestyle who very few enjoy.
What is the solution?
Good question.
Or is it a mix of solutions?
Yeah, and I think it's always a mix of solutions. I think I study collapse of civilization, human civilizations, as a hobby, not as a my life's work. And I think we really change under crisis. I think humans tend to not do what's absolutely necessary until they have no choice but to act. And I'm talking about people who really have an impact, whether it's on the economic side, really any area. And I think that we're not there yet, but I think that we'll be forced to change the way that we're behaving. And I think it will be swift, as these things often are. And I'm that's just what I think. I think we won't change until we're forced to.
I agree completely, and I think that both on the political level and on the, I think that all my work, from my point of view, is prepping, right. is prepping us to that, prepping us, prepping yeah. myself, my immediate community, my audience, that is preparing us to change, is preparing us to the expansion of the heart that has to come when change happens.
Amir, thank you for talking to me.
Chris, thank you very much. You're true inspiration. I am saying this with lots of friendship and love to what you do and who you are.
I'm grateful. This is the first of what will be 1,000 conversations.
Inshallah.
TED Talks Daily is brought to you by Progressive. Progressive helps you compare direct auto rates from a variety of companies so you can find a great one, even if it's not with them. Quote today at progressive.com to find a rate that works with your budget. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Support for this podcast comes from the Defender 110. For those who embrace the impossible, the new Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with thoroughly modern design, with an exterior that's reimagined with really compelling proportions and really precise detailing. The interior is built with robust materials, built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary, whether you're off-roading or dealing with harsh weather conditions. And the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8 people. Really great for trips and big families. A vehicle made to go further is the Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender. You were listening to Amir Nizar Zuabi in conversation with Christine McDivitt-Tompkins for TED Intersections. If you're curious about TED's curation, find out more at TED.com/curation guidelines. And that's it for today. TED Talks Daily is part of the TED Audio Collective. This episode was produced and edited by our team, Martha Estefanos, Oliver Friedman, Brian Green, Autumn Thompson, and Alejandra Salazar. It was mixed by Christopher Fazy Bogan. Additional support from Emma Taubner and Daniela Balarezo. I'm Elise Hugh. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh idea for your feed. Thanks for listening.
On the TED Radio Hour, online shopper Aparna Mehta used to get a lot of packages delivered to her door.
Oh, per week? 12, 15?
Whoa!
Sorry, but I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. Look, the store is making it possible for me to order as many as I want and return back what I don't want.
Shopping and the state of fashion. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen to the TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
PRX.